Welcome to The Pursuit of Purpose, a podcast made possible by SkyLife Success, a SkyPass Group company. Join Krish Dunham, an author and speaker whose messaging has been described as the junction where God's ability and man's availability meet hope's accessibility.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. This is your humble host, Krish Dunham. It's a Monday morning in the city of Dallas, state of Texas, and next week at this time, we'll be on our way to the land of my birth, India, and hopefully the next missive we give you will be from there. We're trying to do this once a week in addition to all the other things that we have going on. I have recently started writing some articles to a website or a domain called Substack, which if you want to have access to those articles, I think you can go to Substack, and then it's a free subscription. Today, I want to chat with you about something I wrote, the most recent article. It was called Winston's Worry and Bernard's Belief. Of course, for most of you who know how I track, you know I use alliteration, so if the words sound vaguely familiar and rhyming, it's just my style and my bent. It's something I've gotten comfortable with. And I use it more casually than I should, I guess. But the title is called Winston's Worry and Bernard's Belief. This may be a two-parter because of the length of what I want to share with you. But let's give you a little backdrop about who Winston is and who Bernard is and why they should matter to you. Winston is the central character in George Orwell's 1984. 1984 is a dystopian prediction that Orwell penned in 1948. And Winston is a character from that. His world is showcased by an ever-present enemy. He works for a Big Brother. Everybody is called a comrade. And then if you follow 1984's logic of a world that Orwell predicted, of course, that was now 30 years ago, but when Orwell predicted it, he says, you know, there would be totalitarianism, there would be an authoritarian regime, there would be a constant impending war that was being fought with, which he predicted an enemy in Eurasia, which means he basically said Europe and Asia had become a common enemy of the people. And this particular domain that was going to be what was described in this book is a secular society unto itself that has almost all control over its populace, its primary motifs being what he called doublespeak and groupthink, and the basic enemy of the people, the enemy of the state, was the individual who participated in what was called thought crime. So this is a very interesting premise that Orwell is now laying out, that there would be a time in the future, now he's writing this in the 1940s, there would be a time in the future where people would become kind of controlled mechanisms, and so the way they think, the way they speak, the way they act, the way they behave would be controlled. So that's Winston, and I said Winston's worry was that. Bernard, of course, is the central character in Aldous Huxley's work, which was titled A Brave New World. Subsequently, he penned an edition to that, which was called A Brave New World Revisited. But Brave New World was written circa 1930-31, and incidentally, Huxley was Orwell's tutor at one time. The interesting premise of these two books, and we've talked about it in the past, is that both of them have kind of worked their way through the annals of literary history and have propelled themselves to be amongst the top 100 books ever written in the world. Some have put Aldous Huxley's work, A Brave New World, as number 5, as number 13, which means when you look at the volume of work that has been written from John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, from the Gutenberg Bible, and from all of those things, Bible itself, for these two works to be considered in the top 100 works ever written brings us to a very casual observation, and that observation is, how true is their moods and their motifs now? So Winston's world showcased that ever-present enemy, and then if you look forward Bernard's belief in Brave New World was more amusing than tyrannical. In his exploits, he goes and visits the Bureau of Propaganda and talks about the 60-floor building and how many floors of those occupied propaganda, and how there were different categories of newspapers that were being offered to different categories of society based on their ability to participate in society at large. He talks about the Department of Emotional Engineering, and he talks about this world, which would be an engineered world where the people would be laboratory engineered people. Test tube babies would be brought out in the form of twins. And as you go through the book, he actually talks about visiting this lab. And in that lab, when you look at the lab, there are like 90 sets of twins that are being promoted at the same time and all that. So again, both of these are dystopian predictions. So if you're tracking with me, we're talking about two different books, two different people, written about 13 years apart, one predicting a year 1984 and the other predicting the year 2500 in the Gregorian calendar. Now, the reason I titled this Winston's Worry and Bernard's Belief is, I said if you fast forward to our times, Winston's worry is our worry. First, we presently have the most significant peacetime right now, but fear is always on the horizon of an impending war. Because the three primary motifs of 1984 were that Big Brother would always remind you that war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Even as we speak right now, the president of a nation is in a war-torn area in another part of the world, and supposedly we are in a great peacetime within here, the United States, but the machine that funnels war in other parts is actually being financed to a large degree by our own tax dollars. So war will be peace, freedom will be slavery, and ignorance is strength. The freedom of the moment enslaves us with the most absurd regulatory mechanism ever known to free people. And finally, the strength that ignorance has amassed is beyond baffling. This is what I wrote in the article that you can find on Substack. Where else but in the minds of ignorant buffoons can the thought emanate that non-citizens should vote and biological men are allowed to compete in women's sports? Now, without getting too deep into the darkness of what I'm sharing with you, in the state of New York right now, there is a proposal at the assembly level, and the assemblywoman basically saying that should expand to the state, the district, and eventually the national level, where people who are not citizens, because they participate in economy, whether it's shadow or not, should be allowed the right to vote. The insanity of that is beyond absurd. But the emotional engineering with which it is offered is Winston's worry and Bernard's belief. The worry is not mere folly, but an assault on common sense. This travesty does not lie in the legislation of nonsense. It lies in the election of the ignorant to debate that nonsense. Because you have to realize, at the end of the day, the person proposing this is not someone who is a random byproduct of time plus matter plus chance. This person actually canvassed for that position. This person actually went out on the election circuit, filed their papers and their nomination, then stood on debate stages and offered the platform that would which be the foundation of their own governance. So this is one state. Now, you might want to have proponed this all over the world, and you'll begin to realize that there is an absurdity that is going on in modern civilization. And this absurdity, while it seems to come from those who are legislating, actually, if you peel the onion back, realize that they didn't get there by accident. We put them there. The other day, I was speaking to a group in the United States, and I shared with them, within the United States Declaration of Independence is the word, the rights of the governed, which means the rights belong to the people being governed, not the ones governing. By the same token, it says we hold these truths to be self-evident, the truths of the unalienable rights, and amongst those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Happiness is the only one that has a qualifier of pursuit. The others are given. But once we elect them, it's flipped over as much as we have to now try to find ways to make you happy. No, happiness is my domain. I have given you my inalienable rights and rights and liberty. Pardon my little stutter there. But the liberty that I have given you is my right that you have to now enforce as my sacred right and govern with that because I have given you my sacred right. Well, that's the reality of the world. But when I look at Winston's worry and Bernard's belief and peel back the annals of these two seminal texts, I realize we are actually bang in the middle of both 1984 and A Brave New World. He visited the Bureau of Propaganda, I said. The Department of Education and the National Endowment for the Arts are as damaging as any propaganda. Now, when I talk about the Department of Education and the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm talking about the United States in particular. But if you look at any nation, you'll begin to realize that education, to a large degree, is not about teaching people the reading, writing, and arithmetic like it used to be. It's not like the Academy of Plato and Aristotle, where you give them the ability to reason and think. These are propaganda machines where we are indoctrinating children by erasing large chunks of history that we think are unpalatable to our own cause. As a result, we black mark or white out a lot of the things that actually frame history. The Department of Education, National Endowment of Arts, see, sex education right now in the U.S. is taught in grade school. Amongst the things taught are lifestyle choices, behavior preferences, and we allow people who dress up as drag queens to teach what is called drag queen hour. Now, the goal may be noble in that we don't want anybody to have shock value when they see someone dress different, act different, talk different, and behave different. But to bring them at that innocent level when a person is 4 and 5 years old has no other design. What awareness can a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old have? It is not like we're teaching them about Newton's law of gravity or we're teaching them Pythagoras' theorem. We're teaching them lifestyle and behavior because that's an easy sell. If you really want awareness of the people, why don't you introduce the concept of postmodernism and philosophical thinking? Why don't you bring to these people, like the founding fathers of the United States got in the first grade and the second grade, when by the time they were 15, they were advanced in the areas of Euclidean geometry and understood deep Latin. So Bernard's world, Bernard's belief, and Winston's worry are our worry. I'm going to unpack this a little more. I think I got a little ahead of myself. But for Bernard, amusement and passive entertainment were the new words. This morning as I was listening to 1984 again, trying to get beyond, it said, you know, we need to create a Newspeak dictionary. The Newspeak dictionary that they talk about in 1984, according to Winston, he's being told by someone else, Winston, you don't seem to be on board with this Newspeak dictionary. We're in the 13th edition. And in the 13th edition, we might find out that we're going to eliminate the antonyms of certain words because the opposite of the word is built in the original word itself. The illustration they gave is, why do we need to define bad? When we know that if we define good, good itself is an understanding that there is no bad. So there's no reason for a definition of bad. And he says the constriction and the contradiction that will eliminate itself is by the year 2050, the dictionary will be so narrow that the amount of speech that is being offered will be so controlled that people won't have imagination because they won't need to have imagination. Now, while this is sold as a positive, I actually paused myself, switched off the CD player as I was walking in or the podcast as I was driving in and thought to myself, we are already there. Every year, Oxford Dictionary comes out with new words, and these new words have no modicum of reference to reality. They're using words like Starbucksization and any other thing in popular culture that makes people feel happy. Ironically, even within the confines of 1984, the people who don't have friends, you just have comrades. Well, comrade was a communist slogan. It was something you allied with when someone believed in the anti-establishment nature of something. So no longer are we saying that these worries and these beliefs need to come through revolutions and counter-revolutions. These worries and these revolutions are going to be part of the mandate by just changing basic diction, by changing basic vocabulary. The Department of Defense is no longer going to be called the Department of Defense. It's going to be called the Department of Peace. Even though the Department of Peace is from where all bombardments take place and all wars emanate, they say the ultimate goal is peace, so why do we call it a Department of Defense? Isn't that fascinating? If you look at the southern border of the United States, that's exactly what's happening. Why have a border at all and call it a defense or a first line of defense for the sovereignty of a nation? Why don't we call it an area of integration and assimilation? And we cannot call people illegal, because that by itself begins to demonstrate that they have done something wrong. Well, obviously they have. If you violate the charter of a nation and cross across a boundary illegally, that is illegal. But now the word illegal seems to be maligned. It seems to be some kind of a slur. So slowly they're eliminating words by saying that these could have a negative connotation. We're already there. Winston's worry and Bernard's belief are our world. I'll culminate with this. So the glaring coalition of contradiction marks our present. We are winners in stupidity and losers in common sense. Capitalism is a noble pursuit as long as you constantly discuss the evil of another's prosperity. We cherish accomplishment by the bore ranking and grading achievement. We love sports and fear picking winners, which means we want both the good and the bad, but we don't want good and bad to exist. We want to have the right and the wrong, but we don't want right and wrong to be defined. So we march carefully like rats, cheerfully, following the Pied Piper while oblivious to the end. The worry and belief of man are no longer fiction but fact. Our world's worries and beliefs are no longer dystopian predictions and novels, but an evident reality in the pages of our own lives. Unless we arrest the criminality of this boundaryless thought, we will face a future more desperate than anything we've ever seen. Erasing history leaves the present without a foundation and the future without a plan. I ended that article like this, and I'm going to pick this up next week and probably do something similar, but maybe from an Indian context. Right and wrong are simplified when grammar punctuates and imagination fluctuates and not the other way around. At some point, you know, you can move your hand behind your head at the back and come around to your nose from the left-hand side if you're right-handed and make scratch the itch, or just take your finger straight up to your face and scratch the itch. Either way, you'll get rid of the itch, but in the former area with your hand wrapped behind your head, you look like a fool. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create long, elaborate defenses for something that is indefensible. I didn't want to get you all riled up, but I want you to think. Is Winston's worry and Bernard's belief our worry and our belief? Are 1984 a prediction that has already come to pass, or A Brave New World, a prediction that is yet to happen? Are they already our reality? Maybe this week I would encourage you to pick up those two books and start dissecting for yourself to see if the debacle that we are experiencing is not anymore a fiction in great novels or great pieces of literature, but is our reality. Until next time, this is Krish Dunham. Good luck. God bless.
And that concludes another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose with Krish Dunham, brought to you by SkyLife Success. Please subscribe, rate, and visit us on the web at krishdunham.com and skylifesuccess.com, where you can find our social media links and access to additional resources. Till next time, happy learning and happy living.